SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday, and welcome to the second half of 2019. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964 if you're listening to Sirius XM Online. And at our website too, stevebick.com. Fresh content today after a week of best ofs, and a nice refresher. 5 days away, really nine, I guess, if you count the two weekends on either side of last week. A fair amount of racing, though. There was too many good things to keep track of and frankly, and to handicap and wager. You can't get too far away, frankly. It's too hard to completely cut yourself off from racing, especially when there you had that multi-day carryover the other day in New York. That was fun. Take a swing at. Just missed. You had the big weekend, of course, going back to the Suffolk send-off, the last 2 days at Suffolk. We were in Boston after we wrapped up on Friday. We took off and had just really the nicest time. If you didn't hear the details of what transpired Saturday, of course, rained. Just, I mean, a violent storm in a couple different places, including Monmouth on Saturday this past weekend, dealing with that and having to cancel after, what, four races. But at Suffolk, it was really sad because on Saturday anyway, Sunday ended up great, even with some rain. But Saturday after the seventh race, which was dedicated to Bill Perry, and it was a sweet and bittersweet moment. And then the skies opened up, and certainly if it was going to have that kind of an ending on one of the days, certainly it was nice that it waited until after Bill Perry was fondly, emotionally remembered. I could tell you a million different things that went on, particularly at Suffolk. And I'm going to have to work that in. We had a great time on Friday night. Tina and I we ended up staying out in Newton and took the T in and went down North End and had really a nice, nice time. And then Saturday too, I don't let me not tell you about a restaurant we found in Chelsea. My God, found a place called Mario's. Holy cow. I'll save that for Johnny. Unbelievable family, mother and son, and wow. Write it down in case I forget and don't get to it. Mario's in Chelsea. My God, it was great. We didn't do much other, that was the only getaway Tina and I really had, was the Boston trip. And otherwise, around the house, we got a million things going on, including impending, threatening kitchen renovation. It's going to come at a good time because the first half of the year was not kind to the waistline. So not having a kitchen here for probably the first half of the meet. Timing may be good. Maybe eating a lot of cold cereal. That'll be all right. When it came to what went on the racetrack, we'll get as much in before we turn toward Saratoga's opening day Thursday. And it's so weird to come back like this and have Saratoga, be right on the doorstep. It's crazy. I mean, I'm excited, and I think everybody is. Yesterday, wrapping up the Belmont Spring, and of course, last week, Churchill, last Saturday, they wrapped up a very strong meet, and the scene shifted to Ellis. We'll slip that conversation in. Los Al up and running as well, and we're just another week away from Del Mar, and we'll be in full summer mode at that point. Ellis, Saratoga, and Del Mar. But the Belmont meet, which ended with certainly not a surprising training title for Chad Brown, but Jose Lascano came down to Jose and Luis Saez. And what a nice career stripe this is for Jose Lascano, who had a absolutely terrific spring, highlighted, of course, on Saturday by the Belmont Derby. You call it an upset. That race, 14 horses, I don't know. I you could have gone, for me, I used as many as 8 in some setting and still didn't get to Henley's Joy. Other people liked Henley's Joy. I know Jonathan Kinchin liked Henley's Joy based on some bad trips, but it was forwardly placed and scores for Mike Maker, Jeff Bloom, and Lascano puts a real exclamation point on his riding title, winning the Belmont Derby. So much of this, I mean, I'm bouncing all over because there's so much to discuss. You know, Saturday in New York, Delaware as well, Prairie Meadows had the Iowa Festival of Racing, and another Derby DQ. We got to get to that because I kind of didn't get that DQ. I thought that was a little chippy, but everywhere you looked, going back to last week, of course, the Queen's Plate, and Richard Baltus, One Bad Boy, which kind of a house horse for at the races, where, right, we had hints about One Bad Boy from Baltus, you know, going back earlier in the year, and the fact that the Queen's Plate was on the menu, and then the way the race shaped up, you know, very little pace, and Flavian Pratt with the unusual Derby Plate double. And I saw a piece last week that Gene Kirshner from Buffalo wrote, and Kent DeSormo did it, and who, Baeza, I think, with Northern Dancer, DeSormo on two different horses, and of course, Northern Dancer unique, having, you know, one Derby and the Plate. And we'll talk to Baltus halfway through this morning. The decision, you know, since last week, the decision made to go ahead and try at Fort Erie in the Prince of Wales. They'll go ahead and run him on the dirt. And Baltus will get all the details from Richard about a potential Canadian Triple Crown try, at the very least. They're going to go. Well, you don't have to worry about them on the grass, that's for sure. Let me give you the lineup, and that'll maybe trip the way to go, you know, go through the checklist of tremendous racing and the topics and the everything that's gone on. The encouraging performance, I thought, from Saturday in particular. John Service is going to join us first in about 10 minutes after the first break. We'll talk about Jaywalk. And this was a lift-your-head effort, because I can tell you that the team behind the two-year-old champion, they were a little concerned about, you know, where she was and where she stood. And this was the Jaywalk that, you know, was so good last year. And the cross-traffic filly for Cash is King, Chuck Zackney, and DJ, the Greens, Aaron Yagoda and everybody, they got to be thrilled. I tried to get Aaron to go to Delaware. I Saturday early morning, I said, "You going down to Delaware?" should have gone down there. He's going to miss being in that picture. We'll talk to John not just about the Oaks win with Jaywalk and what's ahead with a lot of three-year-old opportunities, obviously. And you have to think the Cotillion is the September goal, but what's going to go on in between? Saratoga visit or, you know, we'll see. Anxious to talk. And earlier this past week, it was run without a lot of fanfare, frankly, but the Dr. Penny at Parks on Tuesday last week, and I think people just kind of, you know, weren't paying a lot of attention to the race going in because it just seemed like Chad Brown was going to be virtually impossible to beat. And 55, you know, predictably went off at 2-5, but not a Prada price. Mainline, you've heard, and I'm sure Johnny will bring it up. Our friend Will Schwartz, Johnny's longtime pal, golfing partner, Eagle ticket holding partner. His first and his partner's first graded stake win in 2 decades of being involved in horses. And a huge thrill, not a Prada price, a Patio Prada. And Frankie Pennington with the upset. Could not be passed in the Dr. Penny. So just thrilled for Will, and we'll talk to John. He's got plenty more, and we'll see what his 2-year-olds and his Saratoga plans might be. Basically, I think everybody I reached out to, well, Baltus just with the Queen's Blade, he's won other things, but Jimmy Jerkins later, Jimmy won with Holy Helena. I thought that was an impressive performance, winning the dance smartly on the Queen's Plate undercard. And then Preservationist on Saturday, you know, had to be considered. This is a 6-year-old that Centennial and Jimmy, they've had to wait and wait and wait. Lightly raced, a 108 buyer winning the Suburban. And he immediately stamps himself. If he can stay healthy, Jimmy talking about maybe one start, probably at the end of Saratoga, the Woodward and Breeders' Cup. If they can keep him right, this is a serious jumping in at the quarter pole handicap division type. Be interesting to see tomorrow when this is really the first Breeders' Cup classic pole that Jim Gluckson wrangled me into anyway, and everybody, I guess there's 3 dozen of us that are doing the voting. It'll be very interesting to see where Preservationist pops in after that effort, because that was serious. And we'll talk to Jimmy about both Holy Helena, Preservationist, and actually yesterday I thought there was a real chance that I'd have a weekend double to talk about with Jimmy in addition to Holy Helena, because Candy Graham from Mongo. Candy Graham looked, you know, a major player in the state dinner yesterday at Belmont, but ends up getting beat by Prince Lucky was a Godolphin. Prince Lucky, the Pennsylvania bred. And that was a snapback performance after 2 lackluster efforts earlier in the meet. I mean, he got drilled in the Met, and he was dull in the Westchester prepping for the Met. But this was more like his good efforts over the winter when he won, the House Hope and the Gulfstream Park. I don't know what Todd's going to do with him, because he seems very one-turny. But the funny thing about Candy Graham getting beat yesterday, Prince Lucky's by Corinthian. So it was one of those wincing performances where you say, oh, got beat by one of our great horses for Centennial in their history. Saturday was tremendous fun at Belmont. I don't know if we're going to talk to Shug today or tomorrow, but we'll catch up with Shug because, boy, code of honor. Whew. Came back and yowza. In my write-up, I said I went fishing for a big price. I thought maybe the Aspison that came in had a look, might get away with easy fractions. But, boy, code of honor. If Shug didn't have him batted down, whew, he may be your second half horse to monitor in this free-for-all for the three-year-old championship. Promises fulfilled in the Nehrud, the rechristened Belmont Sprint. I've told you how pleased I was that that happened. Promises fulfilled, didn't have to go, 43 or 44, and pretty much dominated up front under Luis Saez. And Concrete Rose, I'd probably get rusty tomorrow. I'm sure he's moving his barn this way. But Concrete Rose, she throttled the Oaks. Congratulations to Ashbrook and Bromigans and Rusty and Julian Leperu. That was big. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Just getting going. Second half of the broadcast year underway. John Service joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Summer is one of the best times for serious horse players to bet their races. Saratoga and Del Mar are in full swing, along with other top tracks like Gulfstream and Laurel, and ExpressBet puts them all at your fingertips. Plus, ExpressBet customers can play in exclusive tournaments and promotions this summer, and new customers can earn a $500 sign-up bonus. Visit ExpressBet.com today. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races. And a couple of minutes to vamp here. Plenty to talk about, obviously. John Service will join us in a couple of minutes. Must have a horse on the track. And I didn't even tell you everybody that's going to visit. Well, of course, Johnny, top of hour two. Nick Luck is going to stop by, and not physically. He's still in the UK. But two stories, obviously, from the weekend, and the racing story was the return of Enable in the Eclipse, and this was another horse where you heard people and you had suggestions. Well, maybe she's not, you know, totally geared up. Wow, she's there are so many horses, it seems, you know, around. I know that Almond Eye got beat last, but you know, the conditions conspired a little bit against her. Enable is really an amazing story, and I want to get Nick's take. You know, she angles toward, you know, potential another ARC win. But the other story that prompted me to jot down Nick as I was, you know, making a list of everything that we got to cover, you know, before we turn to the weekend and Saratoga opening, and we've got Indiana, of course. We'll talk this week to Bill Downs as the Indiana Derby and Oaks and the big day at Indiana Grand Saturday. But the news that came that John McCrerick had passed away, and McCrerick, for American audiences, was a I don't even know what to say. I think I don't know. I said you can't even limit yourself to calling him colorful. He was way more than colorful, and I saw some very nice. There was an outpouring considering how much of a bit of a lightning rod he had become, thanks to reality TV appearances. It kind of obscured McCrerick's, you know, real gravitas and you know, and real journalistic chops that he had, you know, on full display for years, you know, before he became something of a caricature of himself. And reading his backstory is particularly fun, and there were some things that he did that I wasn't even aware. But I think in some ways, and we'll let Nick tell the story later, he'll be with us hour three. Yeah, I do remember when McCrerick more or less anointed Nick Luck and called him the obvious, you know, next generation in presenting, as they call, you know, host and punditry duties. But for us, I think in the U.S., he was really a fun and mirthful and you know, just a lot of bluster, but there was real, you know, you knew there was real knowledge and the Breeders' Cup incorporated him, and he became a fixture. I wrote on Saturday that I'm pretty sure it was in 2006. I'm almost positive it was in that Breeders' Cup. And it could have been a later one, but I don't think so. In 2006, and I don't think Darren was there yet, so it must have been Tony Terry at Churchill, and it was in the old press box, the old Joe Hirsch, the original Joe Hirsch Media Center. And it was my first Breeders' Cup, you know, working with the show and, you know, covering Breeders' Cup. I've been with the show just about a year at that point, because we started November of 2005. And I get to the Downs and get my assignment, my seating assignment, and John McCrerick and Jenny, his wife, affectionately known as Booby, were next to me. And I got to tell you, it was intimidating at first anyway. And then, you know, as 2 days pass, you start to talk and you have lunch and you're sharing a workspace, essentially. He could not have been nicer. I mean, could not have been nicer and inquired as to what I did and how I came to be involved in racing and interest and just really, in fact, disarming, especially if you came into it, you know, having a certain expectation of him. And, you know, he had a tough time of it at the end and had gotten frustrated and a little bitter. And we'll let Nick, you know, really detail it. And I know that, you know, he's got great affection for John. And I think American audiences in general did. But he understood, as you, if you've read any of the obits and tributes, he really understood the media evolution, and he was already missed because he really had not been, you know, front and center. I'll tell you who I know that fans of the 2-year-old Philly champion, they missed the Jaywalk, and maybe we can just forget about the first half of 2019 and talk about Saturday as being the kickoff to a big second half, because her performance in the Delaware Oaks was the Jaywalk that that John Servais and everybody in the team knows and loves. John Servais joins us. John, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. And you know, there was already a race and a win for me to talk to you about, because on Tuesday, of course, for Mainline, Will Schwartz and his partner, not a Prada Price, with a huge upset in the Dr. Penny, with you know, the Chad Brown 2-5, 55, you know, pretty obvious. So it ends up being a terrific 5-6 days for you in the barn. Let's start with Jaywalk, and then we'll work our way back to Tuesday. Take us from the disaster in the Oaks to Saturday.
Well, you know, the Oaks didn't get away good. She didn't get away bad, but she got squeezed a little bit and kind of ducked in from that horse and bothered the horse inside of her, and unfortunately dropped her. But she never really ran a race. She was laying close, sitting good, and just didn't go on. And came out of the race fine, and had been fine all year, really. I mean, she'd been working good and training good, and, you know, just wasn't showing up. So we got her back home and freshened her a little bit and switched her training up and kind of went back to what we were doing. We were doing more breezing early in the year this year than we were last year. And we went back to the old way and, you know, started doing a little more 2-minute licks and that kind of stuff. And she seemed happy and doing good. And I slapped some blinkers on her to try to put a little of that speed back in her. And she went into the race great. You know, I kind of didn't really know what to expect. I mean, she'd gone into every race really good this year. And, you know, she seemed really happy. And I was like, all right, well, let's see who shows up today. And she showed up big time.
You know, and maybe myself included, maybe we were being a little tougher than necessary coming out of the Devona Dale and the Ashland. I mean, it is easy to kind of just put a line through the Oaks. Those two performances, I'm curious if you look back and you have a feel for, you know, whether you were kind of easing her into the year or, you know, she just got beat on the square and she needed, for whatever reason, you know, just to kind of regain the style and form that she showed it to.
Well, in the Devona Dale, I mean, I told the owners going in, you know, she's nowhere near 100% fit, but, you know, I don't want her too cranked up. It's too early in the year. You know, our goal is going to be the race in May, and you know, it's going to take us a while to get there, so it's a long haul, and they all understood. And she ran, she she ran worse than I thought she'd run. I mean, she was sitting good, and you know, she kind of packed it in late and came out of the race good. She didn't seem that tired. So I bared down on her, you know, a little more going into the Ashland. And again, I didn't want her, you know, I didn't want her jumping up and running huge in the Ashland and then bouncing coming back into the Oaks. And at the quarter pole in the Ashland, she looked like she was done. And then she kind of dug back in again and finished all right. And I was like, okay, this is perfect, man. She's going to go into the Oaks really good. And I really thought she'd be tough in the Oaks. I mean, she trained really good and it was doing everything right. And, you know, I was scratching my head. I was very disappointed. So we got her home and just, you know, went back to square one and started all over.
Well, it's funny you say that about the Ashland, because I can remember telling Aaron Yagoda after the race and even saying on the air, when she started to back up and you thought, ugh, the jaywalk's just not, you know, it's just not happening. And then when you looked up in the stretch and realized, holy cow, she stayed on. And I thought to myself, well, you know what? She had every reason to drop anchor and yet plucked away. And I thought, well, you know, maybe this is not, you know, maybe it's a building block. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to cross off the Oaks and we're going to look at the rest of the second half of the year. And I mean, I know the Cotillion is got to be like a beach ball on the calendar. What goes on between now and September?
Well, you know, unfortunately, we got a little downtime right now because of the situation in Delaware. So she stayed in Delaware yesterday with Andy Simoff, and then he's actually shipping her to Patty Hogan's this morning, and then she's going to stay at Patty's until next Sunday. But as long as everything goes good, and she, you know, she came out of it great. Andy said she was fine. She ate good. Everything's good there. So. You know, our second goal of the year, other than the Oaks, was the Cotillion. And, you know, I mapped out a schedule that I was hoping would get her back on track and maybe she could go into the Cotillion with a couple wins under her belt. So right now it looks like we're probably going to do the Monmouth Oaks and then the Cotillion.
Nice. And for everybody that hadn't heard, you know, I guess you can't call it a full-fledged quarantine, but how are they handling the situation at Delaware? You have to keep your horse isolated once you leave, or what's the protocol?
No, well, the problem is those horses are in a barn off the grounds in quarantine.
Right.
The problem was that if you shipped in there to race, you weren't allowed to go back to where you shipped in from. The tracks that where you were housed before wouldn't allow you back. So that's till the 14th. So, you know, those horses either had to stay there or they had to go to a farm somewhere. And I called Patty, and, you know, Patty's like, absolutely, you can bring her here, no problem. So that's what we're doing.
Very nice. And, you know, all things considered, there was real concern, I know, late last week as entries, you know, were going to be taken, especially when we saw so many horses being cross-entered in some of the races, particularly in the Robert Dick. There was a ton of cross-entries, and virtually everybody went ahead and ran. Everybody came out of the race in New York and ran in the Dick knowing. So there was, you know, there was real concern that, you know, this is one of the two big days for Delaware Park. And so, you know, by all rights, it ended up being a very good day. And, you know, having the two-year-old champion contributed mightily.
Well, it was a really good day, and I'll tell you, I mean, it was raining everywhere around Delaware Park except for Delaware Park. It was a beautiful day.
Yeah, I should also note, by the way, as part of this, you know, the opportunity for you to bring Joe Bravo aboard, and I imagine you've won plenty of races over the years with Joe, but talk about tabbing Joe on her.
Well, you know, we knew that the Monmouth Oaks was on our schedule if everything went right. And, you know, I knew Javier, with the day they had at Belmont that day, that I wasn't going to get him.
Sure.
Or Joel, either one. And the Greens, who are, you know, half owners in Jaywalk are have been close with Joe for years. And they mentioned Joe. They're the ones that actually brought Joe up. And I said, well, I'll talk to his agent and see. And I called his agent, and he said, are you kidding? We'd love to come, Ryder. So, yeah, so it works out. It works out good for everybody.
Well, you also, before we talk about other things, I do want to get Surf and Turf in, because Joe rode Surf and Turf as well, and that was a sneaky good performance, and you end up getting Black Type for Surf and Turf in the Kent. A nice third place that, you know, the two horses up front, Eons, who's, I think, won four straight now and beat award winner. But that was a sneaky good effort and something to build on.
You know, for only his third start,
yeah,
and his second start in, what, 8 months or something, I've liked this horse a lot from day one. I really think he's a good horse. And it was a little ambitious. But, you know, we he's a kitten's joy, and we hadn't even gotten him on the grass yet. We wanted to, and you know, I thought he was good enough. I thought he was good enough to compete, and you know, I was hoping I wasn't throwing him to the wolves. And I thought he ran really good. I mean, they got away, you know, they went pretty slow on the front end, and he was making up a little bit of ground through the stretch, but they flew home. I think they came home at like 36 flat. So it was a very good effort for him.
You keep him. You're going to kind of keep him a little protected and covered up quality wise. Get some more experience under him, or do you look at something? I don't know. The Hall of Fame at Saratoga, certainly a 3 year old potential.
No, I mean he. I can tell you he wants to run all day long.
Okay.
He's a horse that I've mapped out a little schedule for him. Through Colonial. They have an A other than the first week of the meet. They're going a mile through 16th. And if he runs real good in there, which I'm hoping he will, then I'll probably keep him there and run back in the Virginia Derby.
Absolutely. And that's going to start to, we're going to hear plenty. We'll have Jill Byrne visit from Colonial, and you're hearing the Colonial schedule mentioned more and more, as particularly Mid-Atlantic horsemen. You know, famously, we're going to talk to Mike Trombetta next. Famously, you know, in the area, John, that you're in, you've got how many condition books on the shelf?
Oh my gosh, at least eight.
Exactly,
It's a stack. Wow.
And it's nice to get Colonial back in. Let's talk also about what transpired on Tuesday in the Dr. Penny. I can only imagine, you know, I've only texted with Will. I didn't talk to him. Johnny D will talk about, you know, how excited Will must be coming out of the Dr. Penny. First graded stake for Mainline. And this is a notable upset. Congratulations there.
Thank you very much. You know, she's a filly that we bought very inexpensively, and it was crazy how it worked out. I think we paid $15,000 for her, and she's just been, you know, her first three starts weren't that great, but that was as a 2 year old, you know, five furlongs, that kind of stuff, and then once she matured a little bit, we got to stretch her out. She's been so consistent and runs hard all the time. Had run into some really good company and run well. And we tried her in, I think, two stakes, and she was third in one and fourth in the other. And then we brought her back up north. We were in Florida, then we brought her back up north, and she won the allowance race at Laurel. And we thought right here at home, you know, graded stake, if we could hit the board, that'd be great for her. And, you know, because our plan was to put her in the November sale this year anyway, because she's five. And, you know, they got away with a real slow pace, and Frankie did a great job on her, and she held off Chad's horse. It was very game, and was huge for everybody. We had a great time. It was a lot of fun.
paid a real price, and I'm looking forward to hearing Will's take on it, and also whether Johnny got in. I'm assuming that that Johnny got a couple of licks in. Nice.
That's deep. Now, you know Johnny got a couple licks in. You know that.
We'll see. He made this may be a tale of woe, but it had potential certainly to really put a few shekels in the pocket. Not a Prada price for Mainline. John, look ahead. Give us a bit of a summer preview. Beside what we've talked about already, how often are we going to see you at Saratoga?
I'm going to be up there for a couple spots. I have actually this weekend. I'll be heading back to Delaware again. Miss Locust Point is going to run in the Dashing Beauty.
Oh, cool!
So we're looking forward to that. And I might bring a colt up for Mr. Zach. I had a 2-year-old into Mischief Colt that won first time. Looks like he's got some talent. And we're debating right now. I'll have to discuss it with him whether we're going to go in the Tyro at Monmouth or the Saratoga Special.
What's his name?
His name is Mischievous Alex.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Mischievous Alex.
And then I have a couple other 2-year-olds I might run up there.
Give us a look. This is our favorite time of the year when we get to look down the shed row and pick out a couple that and you've got plenty that came in off the 2-year-old in training sale season.
Well, I have two right now. Mischievous Alex obviously won his first start and beat a highly regarded horse of Butch Reed's. Who was nominated for the Sanford, actually. and I think they were 6 or 7 in front of the rest of the field. The other one, I have a Bernardini filly that we're excited about, named 50 Shades of Green. And a Super Saver colt named Super John that has been training well.
And I'm going to guess that's J-O-N for John Green.
No, it's actually J-O-H-N.
Okay, all right.
Nice. John Green was kidding me because he owns him. He's like, it's J-O-H-N too, John, not J-O-N. So who we named that one after.
Nice. And 50 Shades of Green.
50 Shades, S-H-A-Y-S.
50 Shades.
Partners on it, yeah. 50
Shades. Oh, very nice. Sure.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, and let me check in on Diamond King as well.
Diamond King's doing good. Probably not going to run him back real quick. You might not see him again till maybe the Mountaineer race. I don't know yet. I don't know if he's going to be ready for that or not.
Well, we'll watch and got to keep an eye on everything that's coming, and we got to watch from Saratoga all the way down to Colonial the next few months. John, as always,
add another book to that stack, right?
Exactly, and a lot of opportunity, and great to get the 2-year-old champion a W, and feels like it'll kickstart the rest of the season for her. Continued success, and I know we'll talk soon.
Thank you very much, Steve. We're excited.
You should be. John Service, everybody. You can follow John on Twitter, too, Service John. Actually, I think he changed it. I think it was it Service Racing now? Originally, it was Service John, and I posted it earlier today. Let me see. Let's go back. Yeah, Racing Service. Right? He had a couple of different starts on Twitter. And Racing Service to follow John. Let's take a break. Come back to the Mid-Atlantic because Mike Trombetta, who won his second Grade One in his career last week in the Highlander, and curiously, both of his Grade Ones have come at Woodbine. It's kind of funny. He also came back, of course, during the week in the Manila at Belmont, and win. Comes out of the Triple Crown season. Normally you take a wait and see, and Steve Davidowitz famously in Betting Thoroughbreds talked about one of the great angles in the game in betting, going against Triple Crown season horses when they start to run back. But I'll tell you what, so far, in just the few weeks, the horses coming out of the Classic Trail, they've done quite well. Mike Trombetta joins us next. Wet Your Whistle, another horse that's streaking, along with Eons and Preservationist. There were a bunch of those the last couple of weeks. And win. We'll find out if the dirt at Saratoga is a possibility. The Jerkins, I would think it's got to be considered, right? Let's take a break. Mike Trombetta next. Johnny D in a little bit as well. Richard Baltus, Nick Luck, Jimmy Jerkins, and more at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's the matter? Nothing's the matter. That's why I can't leave my house. You must get lonely. No, I don't get lonely. So, that's why I can't leave my house. Well, headed to the city, well, I guess I can't hurt. Nothing's on the television, on the network. Take me out of context, take me out of here. Put the windows down, speed it down, really tune it out. There's something going on, but I don't know where. You're playing with your telephone, you're playing with your head. The record seems broken, yeah, I really don't care. Put the windows down, speed it down, really tune it out. Do it again.
We're back, and Mike Trombetta did it again. He went up to Canada and won a grade one. Until I looked last week, because I knew Mike had won at least one grade one, I didn't realize that his previous grade one had come as well at Woodbine. That was with Next Question in the near Arctic in 2012. And I don't know what it is, Mike. Was Mark Cassie giving you lessons? Or what's the story?
It's hard to say, although it's turning into one of my favorite places.
Wet Your Whistle was a horse that we talked about as he was kind of engaging, and it was becoming obvious that he was really fulfilling potential. This was an absolute thrill, undoubtedly. We didn't get that 10-1 morning line, but that's okay. Talk about last week and winning the Highlander.
You know, it was just one of those things that, you know, we kind of had that race on our radar. If things continued to train the way they were supposed to and do well, and we were able to pull it off. We were able to get up there, and, you know, he seemed to like the three-quarter of a mile distance and the long stretch there. It kind of played in his favor, and he needed every bit of it to get to the winner's circle. But, you know, that was a big test for him. He ran with some very nice horses and showed up in a good way.
And it's funny because this race has, at least in recent, you know, in recent memory, you know, has become an opportunity for horses like this that, you know, that are, you know, really kind of finding themselves as they mature. And, the horse of Marshall Grahams and, 10 Strike that went up and won it. And, you know, we talked about the gelding. I took an interest in him right away because he was bred by Bo Lane, who's one of our favorite people in the game. And, you know, Bo Lane breeds and raises a nice horse. This was a bargain. This is also part of the fun of this story, purchased, you know, very reasonably and late as a yearling. And really, you've just pushed every button right with him. It just keeps getting better. And this was, you know, this was a real swing at, you know, at the brass ring. I mean, he's a gelding, so there's no, you know, there's no rainbow at the end here. But when it comes to a stud career, but, you know, why wouldn't you take a shot in a spot like this for, you know, $300,000 and, you know, this kind of a, how many grade ones are there turf sprinting?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to find three quarter of a mile races for, you know, turf sprinters. And he's one of those kind of horses that, you know, 5/8 and even 5.5, the wire gets there a little soon for. So this gave him a little bit of extra ground to work with.
Did you look at the Jiper as well in New York?
I did, but I, you know, at the time I thought this facing, this gave him, I think, a little bit more time, and it gave him probably what we would hope would be a better chance.
I can't remember when it came up. I mean, it was obviously when we were talking win, and maybe it was after, I guess actually it was around Preakness, because the win at Monmouth, I forget when, I called you for, I guess it was when you made the decision to run win in the Preakness. I think we talked, and we talked about Wet Your Whistle. Bring us back, because 17,000, and I think he was in the 10th session at Keeneland. I looked it up and looked up his hip number. And so, you know, this is one of those kinds of stories that small budget owners and connections, Mike, this is a real heartwarming, you know, tale to buy a horse for $17,000 and to do what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was one of those ordinary plain brown wrappers, and you know, we liked him early on, and he actually broke his maiden in his first start on the dirt. So I kind of thought turf was worth a try, and then last season we had all the rain that we did, and I was a little slow to get a good understanding on what this horse really wanted. And because he had won on the dirt, I figured he should be able to compete on the dirt. Well, with a couple of rain offs and a couple of bad efforts, you know, I just was a little slow to realize that, you know, he really probably needed grass and or synthetic. And it wasn't until late in the fall, I took him to Woodbine, and he really just like broke through. It was like a coming out party for him. You know, he run into a 90-something buyer number, and he won out by quite a few lengths. And I said, oh, this is this horse, you know, he should never run on the dirt again. And, you know, I think he could be equally good on a synthetic. But, you know, here we are. We instead of sending him to South Florida, we just gave him a month off. We gave him, you know, some of December and some of January off, and we kept him right at Fair Hill, and we got him started for the spring. And that was one of those decisions that has paid us back.
A couple of things about this. In fact, as you look at the scheduling and you know, you because we're going to have the same conversation partially about win-win-win and about experimentation, distances, surfaces, you know, the various opportunities. You know, you talk about the synthetic and that 91 buyer went off by 8 lengths in that allowance in December. This, you know, these kinds of tests and you know, the sort of trial and error, handicappers can get frustrated just because, you know, you're watching a horse like this and trying to, you yourself are trying to predict, you know, when he's going to, you know, and where he's going to excel. Talk about that from a trainer perspective and the relationship with owner David Palmer and talking it through.
Well, to David's credit, you know, Wetzer Whistle's a little challenging to train. He's very forward. He's very eager. And that's probably why he hasn't done quite as good going two turns as he does going one. But when we once we seen what we had and what kind of horse that we were hoping to have, you know, I looked at the schedule, and if I would have sent him to South Florida, you know, he would have been immensely challenged, and it would have been very hard to, you know, find the right distance in one turn. You know, it just, you know, and you have so little options. So I suggested to Dave, I said, look, I said, it's your call. I said, but the horse is doing really good. But if he was mine, I think I would just table him for 5 or 6 weeks, freshen him up and get him ready for a nice spring, summer, fall campaign. And he didn't hesitate. He said, no problem. And we kept him right there at the barn and just kept him happy. He put on some weight and he really looked good. And we got him geared back up in February. And, you know, it's just the old-fashioned approach. But I think it really worked well for this horse.
Well, a 103 buyer for this effort. And this puts him in the sprint, you know, the sprint, the turf sprinting elite, Mike, and you know, from here you can pick and choose. We'll give us an idea maybe what you got in mind. Kentucky Downs certainly has got, you know, an opportunity for him, and we also should include what a significant win and milestone this is for Alex Cintron.
Yeah, and I would have never had an understanding of what it meant to Alex had I not been there. I mean, he was, you know, he's been chasing this goal for his whole career, and to be able to help him to get it meant a lot to me personally. You know, you see these riders, you know, work hard and evolve, and he's not had the best luck. He's been severely injured a few times, and, you know, every time he had gotten his career going, he had gotten sidetracked. So it meant a ton to him. And as far as what's next, that's always a great question. But obviously the Troy's on the radar. Kentucky Downs is on the radar. And then, you know, wouldn't mind visiting Woodbine again at some point either.
Now, Wet Your Whistle, which is a great name, too. He's a Stroll gelding out of one of the Winlock mares, Winlock's Glory Days. And actually, Mike, it just occurs to me, we've got a 2-year-old filly, and I got to call Bo Lane. I sent Bo a congratulatory text, but it just occurs to me, we've got a 2-year-old filly by Arch, Volterine is her name, and she is out of a Winlock mare, Winlock's Grammy, that's by Belong to Me. So I'm curious about this, about all the Winlock, you know, there were so many of them, but the breeding here is very similar. There's real parallels to the way Wet Your Whistle is bred. Now that I
Well, with that sire line and that dam side, I guess if you haven't gotten to try to turf at some point, you might want to give that some consideration.
Oh, no doubt. And, you know, she, you know, I think she could do, I don't know yet. I think there's a lot that she can do. Came out of OBS and, you know, obviously they're on the synthetic. So we're excited. A big, that's beautiful good. Filling. Let's shift our gears from last week in Toronto. And by the way, Alex Cintron, 2 wins away from 1,000, and it could come today at Delaware Park.
Great.
If not today, then on Wednesday. He's got 4 mounts today. He's got a couple for Scott Lake and 1 for Jose Camejo and 1 for Brett Brinkman. So sometime this week, Alex Cintron is going to hit 1,000 wins, and the grade one, a significant milestone for him. Let's turn to win. And I know, Mike, there were some people that were scoffing and were, you know, thought that running him in the Manila, some people speculated, oh, in case it comes off the turf. And, you know, there were all kinds of discussions about a misapplication of his potential talent, and this is a horse should be going 7/8 or 1-turn miles. Talk about winning the Manila and the doors that it opens for you and Mrs. Weber.
Well, you know, it was an experiment. You know, I tried to put this horse on the grass in his first start. It rained off, and he was successful in the dirt. Therefore, he rode the dirt from whatever it was last year, November, all the way through the Spring Classic. So, you know, we had done that, and he had done it very well. I mean, he had always showed up and run his races. Coming off of, you know, the Derby and the Preakness, I thought this would be as good a time as forever, you know, as ever, to try it. And, you know, it was on the to-do list. And I had no, you know, great expectations. I mean, I thought he could run really well. And if he would have run poorly, I wouldn't have held it against him, and we'd have moved on and learned something. So now I think, you know, we truly don't know what surface he's better on, but we do know that he's proven on both. So we'll see where he takes us.
It would be one thing, you know, if he won this in I don't want to say mundane fashion, but the way in which he won and the way in which Julian Pimentel, it was obvious, Mike, after the race, how confident Julian was. I mean, he came off the turn, and you didn't, before he really engaged, you wouldn't have given 10 cents for his chance. And yep. Within 3 jumps, all of a sudden you realized, oh my God, he's gonna go buy them all.
Well, Julian deserves the credit for the ride. He rode the horse. However, I will tell you, I asked 2 things of him in the race, because this was something, this was a test, and I wanted to be able to see exactly what our abilities were. So I asked 2 things for him, if at all possible. I asked him, one was to save whatever ground he could possibly save, because it's a big, wide, sweeping turn. And then I ask him that if he has horse and he has run, get him outside so he has an uninterrupted run. I didn't want to be in one of those trying to work your way up the inside deals where you get steadied or checked or have to wait and get started and stop. I wanted to just see a raw horse out on the outside being put to work and seeing what his capabilities were. And Julian followed those requests to the letter, almost to the point that I was over-concerned, because I think he might only have maybe 1 horse beat when he got to the straight for home. But when he turned him loose, he had lots of horse to give. And, you know, we learned a lot. We learned that this is something we could certainly do if we want to.
And you know what's funny about it, it kind of harkened to all the things that you saw from him on the main track during the spring, where everybody was convinced that he probably doesn't want to go too far. But at the same time, he was finishing those races with such interest, and closing so well that it gave kind of mixed signals. And to be honest, I think you still have got, you know, one of these weird horse scenarios where you say to yourself, is he going to be best as a closing sprinter? And do you target something like the Alan Jerkins this summer? Or is this our best scenario? Is he a turf miler maybe? I mean, where's your head as of right now, days after the win?
As of right now, I'm in the camp that believes that this horse can do more than what you've seen so far. I mean, I got a real hard time with the fact that a horse closed like he did in the Bluegrass, and then somebody tells you that he doesn't want to go that far. I mean, I was the only one doing the running at the end on a track that was very speed biased. So I don't forget those things. And, I mean, I have a very hard time with the fact that he couldn't be what he wanted to be. So where we go from here, I don't, you know, can he do 7/8? Absolutely. In my opinion, I think he'll be fine with a mile or a mile and an eighth as well if need be. I think it's a unraveling situation. And we'll just see where he takes us. You know, but people are slow to, you know, earn the confidence in some of these horses sometimes. You know, they get real hung up real quickly on what they don't think they can do. And it's still pretty early in the game. It's only, you know, halfway through their three-year-old year. There's a lot to be seen yet.
How has he progressed physically and through, you know, what was a pretty full first half of the year? And when you run in the Derby and Preakness, you know, sometimes you don't know, you know, what you've got for the rest of the year.
And that was one of my concerns. That's why I thought this would be a good time. He's held his flesh good. His attitude's been good. You know, and to have gone through two of the three Triple Crown races and to come back in this fashion and beat a solid field in a fast time, I couldn't be happier.
Would you, and are you going to consider basically sitting on him until the Alan Jerkins? And you know, this is the rare, you know, grade one 7/8 opportunity. There's only this and the Malibu at the end of the year, something that would only, you know, further enhance him as a stallion prospect.
Well, you know, there's certainly a couple of considerations out there, and that's obviously one of them. There's also the big New York races on the turf for a lot of money. So, you know, that was one of the reasons that we did this, so we could see where we stood if, in fact, we wanted to go that direction. So we'll see how he trains, and maybe he'll help to he'll give me a heads up and help me to steer him in the right direction.
Where will you keep him here the next, you know, the next few weeks?
Well, he's a well-traveled individual, but home base has been Fairhill for him. He was back at Fairhill by 9:30 in the evening, July 4th. So, you know, he'll camp out there for at least a couple of weeks, and then at some point, you know, maybe come up to Saratoga and start to figure out what's next.
Well, delighted. I know that Mrs. Weber was thrilled, and she's looking forward to Saratoga. And between the ones that you've got pointing that direction, and that Mark Cassie does, Charlotte, I think, is going to have a fun summer. And let's talk actually about what lies ahead, including I know it's just a claiming event, but some kind of magician on opening day in the fourth.
Well, we'll give it a shot. I mean, I didn't think I'd have anything for the first day, and then it looked like, you know, he had been doing good, so that condition fits him, and the stretch out should fit him, and this is one of those times that I think the one hole is going to work in my favor coming off the sprint, so we're going to jump in there and see if we can't get started.
Are you back in your usual little boutique barn at Saratoga?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's they've been very kind to me to give me that spot, and it's a quiet spot all to ourselves, and we enjoy it a lot up there.
Well, and of course you're right next to the motor pool, so if there's any problems with the golf cart or with the car, you can always you know, get some help from the motor pool.
Exactly. The maintenance guys are nearby, and that's positioned well enough that we, if things get rough, we can walk.
You know, I have not been over to the backside. Has Gio been cleared out of the neighborhood? Has he been moved somewhere?
I haven't been there yet. We're shipping up this week. And if Gary's across the way, it always provides for good morning entertainment.
Gary will be across the way in barn 50. Gary's been in that barn for decades, and so we're looking forward. Talk about Thursday with the first time starter that you've got from the Elkstone Group, from Mr. Grant, the Quantico kid, Tapizar, out of an Unbridled Song, and the Skelding's got the Maryland bred stamp on him.
Yeah, he does, and they were kind enough to send us a couple of horses to work with, and that colt has actually been training nicely. I don't appreciate him giving me the one hole first time out, but it seems to be the way things go sometimes. But I think he'll make the best of it and have a decent showing.
Nice, and Pimentel involved there. You've actually you got a busy week at, it looks like, at Laurel and the heart of the summer. And, you know, we just had John Service. You know, John was talking about a couple of targets and some things for Colonial. And, you know, you've certainly run over the years plenty of times at Colonial. You're going to take advantage of their opportunities?
Yeah, and a lot of the horses in my inventory are Virginia certified. So they'll get an opportunity to run on that track as well. And, you know, it's a little difficult with the traffic commuting back and forth down there, but it's a great facility and a wonderful turf course.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, it's going to be a good summer, clearly, and whether it's here at Laurel, anywhere else that you send them out, the Presk, and my God, you're everywhere, going great. Can't wait to see you here in the coming weeks. What are the kids doing for the summer?
They'll be there with us.
Oh, nice. Very nice. All right.
Yep.
Well,
you got
I will see you in a couple of days. Mike Trombetta, everybody.
Take it easy.
Thanks, buddy. Trombetta Mike on Twitter, if you're not following, you should. And we'll see. I did everything I could to push the Alan Jerkins on Mike. And on Mrs. Weber, too. I just, you know, it's one of those things you have to look at, and I imagine, I'm just thinking about the speeds. Think about the three-year-old sprint types and who else might angle in that direction. You would think that, you know, being a horse that closes like he does, that win-win-win would be a real natural. Well, it's a natural to bring Johnny D on. He's been on almost every Monday. There's been the occasion where he's been away for the first show back from holiday. But he's ready. He had a nice break. He was over at Cape May with Gail. And Johnny's getting ready for fun in the sun. And he certainly had fun in the sun the last few days. Johnny D joins us next. And we'll get his take on the second half of the year. Back after this, later, Richard Baltus, Nick Luck, Jimmy Jerkins, and more. Stay with us.